Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Come on, guys. One more minute.
Hear that? It's the sound of rewards points in use.
Push it.
Because when you transfer credit card balances from your holiday spending to the ESL Rewards Visa Signature Credit Card, you earn points to accumulate and redeem for cash back to help shape up your finances. A special 12-month intra rate also saves you money on balances transferred from higher rate cards. So make the ESL Rewards card your go-to choice every day. Apply online at esl.org/visa. Membership subject to eligibility. ESL is an equal opportunity lender.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy there was very, very little Syracuse news week.
Yeah.
This week. This week.
One of the... You tried that. I tried a different emphasis on the syllables on the way in. Jim Boeheim attended the NBA Finals. That seemed like it was fun. As I mentioned on the blog, he had to tell everybody and bring everybody to this great Italian place in Cleveland, because God forbid Jim ate a different type of food in any city in America.
No, Jim would fit right in, like, in my hometown, which is just all Italian food. But he is so unadventurous, and it's really funny considering, like, I don't know if it's actually appropriate that he, like, has this very specific brand of basketball that he rolls out there, at least defensively, or if it's, you know, if it's weird that, like, in one end of his persona, he's, like, kind of a pioneer, and then the other end, he will only eat, like, chicken piccata in the Northeast.
Yeah, you know, it's... And the thing is, he did it in when he was in Brazil, too, which is, like, the most damning part of all this.
I really need another, like, log of Jim Boeheim traveling and eating. Like, we need Jim Boeheim to go to, like, Thailand. We need Jim Boeheim to take over for Anthony Bourdain.
Well, that's what I remember. Somebody had the great joke. Yeah. R.I.P. Anthony Bourdain, obviously, but somebody had a very good joke calling the show Parts Unzoned.
Yes, that was wonderful. He really is the anti-Anthony Bourdain, and it would be very funny to see him going to these, like, really exotic, far-out locales and being like, I can't get a chicken parmesan anywhere.
Yeah, like, he's definitely one of those who would walk into any restaurant or city and then impart his own viewpoints on them in every way, shape, and form. As Bourdain was kind of a food admirer and someone who wanted to make sure that he captured the essence of what it was, Jim Boeheim is like a food colonizer, and then he'll walk in and make sure that they make him chicken parm before he leaves.
He's just... It's so perfect, and I don't really want him to change because that would be too weird and jarring, and we know he won't. Like, this man lives in Syracuse, is famous for, like, alleging that it's one of the nicest places in the country to live, outside of the couple months where it is very nice. It's just, he's just very much him, and I think we are going to ride it out with what we have at this point. I don't think at 70-plus he's going to be making many different changes to his diet.
No, certainly not. Although I don't know if he's ever made changes to his diet, if I had to guess.
I wonder if he even tries, like, other local, like, will he go to Utica and eat greens? Or, like, will he have, like, Speedies in Binghamton? Is that also too, like, out there for him?
I think he's going to go to Utica and he's going to ask them where good Italian food is.
That's probably right. He will literally just only eat Italian food at, like, or like, maybe a steak.
Yeah, he honestly, like, I don't think he eats much in the way of non-Italian food at this point.
I think the most the most exotic thing he eats is probably the rub on Delmonico's steaks.
Christ. This reminds me of, like, not to throw shade at my parents, but my parents have this, like, thing where, like, no matter where they go, they need to, like, get, like, the Greek food there. And, like, that's great and all, but, like, some places just really don't do Greek food.
Yeah, that's tricky. You're not, like, that's, you know, not all that abundant.
Yeah, so for a long time, me and my siblings and my wife had the joke of, gotta go to the Greeks wherever my parents went. And literally that includes, like, middle of nowhere, North Carolina, just so that they could talk about how the Greek food at that location was not good. Surprise, surprise. When there were no Greeks to be found.
And that's got to be the case for Boeheim in, like, a lot of the ACC. Like, having spent a lot of time down south, there is not a good Italian food. You're not getting good Italian food in Clemson. You might get lucky in Atlanta. Florida, you'll probably be okay, but not, like, Tallahassee, I can imagine. Yeah. Like, you're definitely not getting good pizza. And I cannot imagine, if you're not getting good pizza, you're probably not getting good Italian food in general. And that's probably, like, it's probably the number one thing he misses about the Big East, if we had to guess. Like, if we really, like, hooked him up to, I'm sure he would say the rivalries first in the history. I'm sure if we hooked him up to a lie detector test, he would actually say he just hates that he doesn't get to eat in Providence every year.
Oh, yeah, that's 100% it. I might write something tonight about Parts Unzoned.
Oh, gosh.
If someone on the site can lend me a Photoshop assist, then this thing's happening.
And, I look forward to it.
Yeah. Oh, again, hopefully. So I know I'm speaking out to just you, but if anybody else on the site, and I'll write this in Slack, wants to help me out there, feel free, because I'd very much like to get some jokes and garbage up this week, especially in a week where we've been pretty light on the jokes and more on just the, you know, standard stuff. But anyway, other things about Jim this week. He talked about Elijah Hughes. He talked about Buddy Boeheim. The Elijah comments were interesting, and I know somebody in the comments was joking that, you know, and Dan, you can kind of dive into the comments more. I was talking to John Rothstein. He was very complimentary, and somebody joked that they don't necessarily take his assessments like that to heart, if only because he's prone to hyperbole and regularly wrong. When he goes out on a limb in these cases.
Yeah, like, it's weird. We've heard some of these things from Boeheim, and, you know, sometimes he does a good job of getting people excited. Actually, when I first saw this like, going around, I assumed, because it was from Rothstein, I assumed it was Rothstein doing his thing, where he, you know, said Jeremy Grant was, like, 7'2", and, like, every single player on the team is the best player to ever live, because Rothstein just loves basketball so much. And I don't think Rothstein thinks there are any bad basketball players. I think he treats all basketball players as his beautiful children. But no, this is Boeheim himself really, really going hard on the praise for Elijah Hughes, which is, he's been kind of like the forgotten guy because he came from, like, not a huge program. It's not like, you know, when Wes Johnson transferred in, we knew he was, like, a Big 12. I think he was, like, the runner-up to Kevin Durant for Big 12 Player of the Year or Freshman of the Year. You know, we knew what he was all about. Andrew White was, like, an all Big Ten type player when he came in. Elijah Hughes, you know, was a nice player for ECU, but he was from, like, a small town in New York. He wasn't, like, this huge high profile guy, but he on paper he fits the profile of a Syracuse guard really well. And it's easy to just, like, imagine that he, you know, might just be depth. But if he takes, like, this big step forward, and especially if his jump shooting's coming along, I know that's been one thing we've read a lot about him. Especially during this year off as a transfer, if he's, like, a pretty reliable jump shooter with his size, he could be, like, a really dynamite piece at the top of the zone. Not totally. I mean, I don't know if he'll ever be the type of shooter he was, but, like, he profiles to be, like, kind of a Mike Benajay type,
which would be fun, and it would also
be great.
Yeah, would have us four deep. You could do a lot with that. You could go four deep in terms of legitimate scorers. You could play a real small ball lineup and potentially trot out. You know, Dolezal at the five, which would be nuts. I'd love to see the line of possibilities if Hughes is legit. Boeheim referred to him as one of the better offensive players that we've had in a while. That's very high praise, especially. It's also weird praise when Tyus Battle just said he was coming back just days before. He also complimented Battle, so it's not as if he's not understanding of that. Very... very nice words about use. I think some of it is indeed hyperbole, but nonetheless should be nice to see him out there. I think he could be kind of the missing piece. I know a lot of people are saying, oh, Buddy Boeheim can hit threes, whatever. That's great and all. We just don't really know what his defense is going to look like at that level. So I think if we're banking on one of the new players hitting threes, I think it's Hughes. I think, you know, between him, if he can hit it maybe a 35% clip, it's not amazing, but it's good. If he can hit a 35% clip, if Battle and Howard and Brissett can improve their rate slightly, then suddenly you're looking at a team that can hit from outside, even if we're not going to rely solely on it. This could be a team that maybe, you know, starts shooting 15 to 18 threes a game. And if you're going to hit somewhere in the 35 to 40% range on those, then you're golden and you can beat a hell of a lot of teams out there.
Yeah, and really the worst case scenario, assuming Battle and Howard take, you know, at least moderate steps forward, or even if they're the same players they were last year, which I don't think any of us hope, but like that worst case scenario, if they're the same players they were last year, and Jalen Terry is, you know, a moderate projection of what we think he can be as, like, pretty high four-star guard coming in. Like, Hughes might be the fourth guard on the team. Now, if he's one of the best offensive players we've had in a while, or, like, a middling Syracuse offensive guard, like, that's pretty good. That's a lot more. I mean, considering what we're coming from in terms of depth in the backcourt, we're in, like, a much healthier situation than we have been in a long time.
Oh, yeah, this is fantastic comparatively, just from a depth perspective. I really, really like what we're getting. Like you said, even if all of these guys are just what we think they are, and not much more, I think we're in pretty good shape. But
and just imagine not having to play Battle, like, 40, however many minutes a night. Like, if Battle can play, like, 35 minutes a night during the ACC, and we can get really solid minutes from Hughes, who similar height and weight and hopefully can defend pretty well, and Carey can kind of do the same thing for Howard. Like, it's just going to pay so many dividends down the stretch. And I know depth wasn't, like, really the thing that, I mean, we got to the Sweet 16. I don't know how much more we were going to do if we hadn't had to play our main guys so much, but for a team that now has higher expectations than what we did last year, with, you know, these how grueling the ACC tournament is and then the NCAA tournament is, it should really, really pay dividends next year. And you don't want your guys playing that many minutes 2 years in a row. It's not, I don't think it's necessarily great for their NBA prospects either. Like, it's going to be tough. Battle's already going to have a little bit of an uphill battle in terms of, no pun intended, in terms of having to prove that he's not just, like, a high usage guy who has a lot of tread on the tires. So if he can kind of take some of that workload off with the help of Hughes and Terry, and be more efficient, but also it could pay dividends in terms of, like, you know, it's showing that Boeheim isn't just going to run you into the ground if you come to Syracuse. Now, if that was a one-time thing, it's not a huge deal, but I think it's only a positive if we have, like, a four-guard rotation like this. And obviously, Boeheim wanted everyone excited because he does do this sometimes with players that don't end up panning out, at least what he said. But if Hughes just couldn't play, I don't think we would have heard anything like this.
No, absolutely. Yeah, he's. It's not as if his hyperbole is so far off, you know, that it's completely wrong. It might just be a little bit of a stretch. I think, you know, you look at how good the zone was last year. Look at how good it was in the NCAA tournament in particular, with guys that were playing, you know, 39 to 40 minutes a night and really being run into the ground. Imagine now taking that system and all the guys from it, for the most part, from this past season, and then plugging in, you know, a couple more guys that can maybe play at similar levels or slightly worse levels at the early parts of the year, and hopefully then progressing into being capable zone players later on. But, you know, reduce those minutes, even if it's just by a few here and there, and suddenly you're looking at a team that's a lot fresher and can really kind of hold it down on defense from start to finish. I think, you know, we talked about this before. Battle wants to prove he's more efficient to NBA scouts. He can do that by producing at a similar level with fewer minutes and fewer shots on the offensive end. So I'm just looking forward to seeing what type of player he can be, you know, as he wasn't a 30 to 35 minute per game guy as a freshman, and he, So I want to see how he can do as, you know, a bona fide starter, a 30 to 35 minute guy now as a junior, you know, some NCAA tournament experience under his belt. There's a lot to be interested in. I know that a lot of people think that he can't necessarily get better. I don't think he can necessarily get better overall as a player, but I do think he can get better just in terms of showing, you know, better decision making and better shot selection by way of just reduced minutes and reduced exhaustion.
Yeah, and it'll also help us. We won't have to play that grinding, you know, really unaesthetically pleasing pace of offense. We can probably modulate our offensive rhythm a little bit more, play a little more up-tempo. And also we can see Boeheim break out some of those defensive wrinkles we've seen in years past with more trapping, some pressing that we saw in the last couple of years, which we really couldn't do because of the limitations we had last season. It'll be nice to have those kind of in the tool belt once again, because we, you know, had some good success with that when we were able to play like eight guys a couple of years ago.
Agreed. Again, the more that you can do, the more that you can and play more than five healthy guys at once, I think the better off you are under any circumstances. Yeah, shockingly. also, while we're on the Rothstein comments, I was watching, what is it, Inside College Basketball or whatever their CBS sports show is?
I think so.
Yeah, I was watching that the other day, like randomly, and my wife was with me, and she remarked that John Rothstein needs a better haircut.
I'm always jarring. It's always jarring to see him in person because he just doesn't look that much like his crazy profile picture.
No.
He looks way more human, and I wish he didn't. I wish he was more like his crazy profile picture.
Oh, yeah. It's much easier to laugh at a robot.
Yeah. There's a weird disconnect between Rothstein, the actual person, and Rothstein, the Twitter bot, and I don't like it. I wish he was more of the Twitter robot. Galaxy brain type deal. Like that a lot more.
Oh, completely. I think that the more people could align. I do feel like I know there are exceptions, but I feel like I'm largely who I am on Twitter. I mean, Dan, you know me well enough in person and online.
Yeah, those ones of times we've met.
We've seen each other three or four times at this point.
Yes, in weird, various states.
Yes.
Two states. Just New York and North Carolina.
True.
I think, and same thing, like, I try to generally be who I am. I think if you listen to our podcast, it's not that that different than what you'll get from the Twitter experiences of either of us. Rothstein definitely comes off as more of a human. And it's he's just like, you know, he's any other, he's very passionate about college basketball, but he's any other like sports dude in real life or on TV versus just the strange personality or lack thereof he has on Twitter. I encourage everyone to go look up the David Roth Deadspin pieces about Rothstein from this past March. They're so delightful and really convey what it is that we all love about John Rothstein because it's so bizarre. Speaking of Italian food, like John Rothstein and Jim Boeheim could definitely dine. They would definitely get along food-wise.
Oh, 100%. Rothstein is another one who seems like he has the type of food that he's going to eat. Like, you know, I'm sure there are some of those, like, people, too, where, like, you love Mexican food, but, like, you've never been to L.A. or San Diego. So, like, I'm sure Boeheim, like, has Boeheim ever been to Italy?
I'm sure he's been to Italy. And he probably didn't like the Italian food there.
He probably didn't. You're right. But yeah, I'm sure there's these types of people that, you know, they love Mexican food, but have never been to LA or San Diego and then criticize the Mexican food that they had in Birmingham, Alabama or like St. Louis.
Rothstein's just a master of tweeting that he's eating an Italian meal somewhere in New York. And he will always get the house salad, and it's just amazing.
Christ. before we close out the first half of things, did want to talk a little bit about some Syracuse scheduling matters. Syracuse and UConn are facing one another yet again. We knew this already just because The 2K Classic folks are not going to, forfeit their ability to guarantee Syracuse and UConn face one another. So they'll face each other on November 15th at MSG. And then the winner of that game will face the winner of world's greatest college basketball team, Iowa, and Oregon, who should be pretty good this year. So I'm kind of rooting for the Ducks for once in my life, if only for the RPI boost that we would get by facing them.
Yeah. Now, I want to avoid Iowa because they are a college basketball power.
The college basketball power.
The definitive college basketball power of Iowa, if you do not include Iowa State or
Northern Iowa.
Or Northern Iowa. They are definitively the college basketball power of Iowa City.
You can't dispute that.
That's a fact. I will not have. I will not hear anything otherwise.
True facts Iowa, stated.
Iowa is one of the three best teams in the state on most occasions.
On most occasions.
And the best team in Iowa City.
Prove them wrong. They're the Big Ten's Iowa basketball team.
I don't even remember. I don't even remember who it was that called. Was it Goodman?
No, it was Rothstein, because Rothstein, for some reason, has a read on.
Rothstein. Again, all college basketball players are good, including those from Iowa.
Yes. No, Rothstein always has a read on this. For some reason, he decided that he had to, like, he said something nice about Syracuse and UConn as, like, you know, former Big East powers and, like, longtime rivals. And then, like, when he broke this part, he was just like, yeah, and, and also, like, rising national powers, Iowa and Oregon, like, Iowa having, and like, and then we, you know, debunk that because they've been to like, what, two Sweet 16s in the last like 20 years. And then like Oregon, like, okay, you made your first Final Four in the last like 70 years. So we're like, yeah, fine programs, I guess. And then this was continued because then an Iowa fan listened to the podcast for reasons unknown and like yelled at me about my opinion of Iowa.
Got real mad.
Got like super mad online. Which, like, I don't know. I'm sure you guys get something better to do than listen to Syracuse podcasts and then yell at them because they had an unfavorable opinion of the Hawkeyes.
As evidenced by Iowa's war against the Stanford band from the Rose Bowl a couple years ago when they lost by, like, 50 points, they do not.
Yeah, they never forget. So that is...
Iowa, weirdly, I'm now realizing, kind of Syracuse-y.
Oh, yeah, like, super Syracuse-y. I mean, if you think about, I mean, case in point, and while we both love Sean, how many times does Sean tweet like per week about the 1987 Heisman Trophy?
Yep, so many. More than when he was running the site. Which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's like it wasn't a meme then; it is now. he several weeks ago tricked somebody into.
That was so funny.
Yeah. Basically, as some people, as everyone I would think that follows this podcast at this point knows, Sean will like Photoshop random things to have like an impassioned statement about why Tim Brown shouldn't have won the 1987 Heisman Trophy, and he did it a very lengthy one where he overlaid Tyus Battle's reason why he was coming back statement like that was Photoshopped and created by SU Athletics. And then he did a whole thing about the 1987 Heisman, and then somebody responded to him in all seriousness and goes, man, like, I don't know why this kid's, talking about the 1987 Heisman Trophy, in his statement about why he's coming back, but I looked at the numbers and holy shit, McPherson, like.
That was just her, he wasn't mad, he was like, he's definitely right.
Yeah, he's definitely right, and, just like, yeah, so Sean is like the resident, McPherson, Tim Brown truther. I'm cool with it. And I'm also cool with generating tons of ire from Iowa fans for no reason at all. I'm still pissed about 2006, guys.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that was a thing. Yeah, so we should really play that up. Like, obviously, we have to play UConn. We don't like each other. We know there's nothing new there. We all know. We know UConn is a new coach. They managed to. They had like a record time in running out a beloved alum who won a national championship very quickly. So bravo to them.
I remember when I wanted him to coach the Knicks like a few years ago.
Remember when he had to pick his pick of like big-time MBA jobs with huge stars attached to them.
Yeah.
And stayed at UConn and then got fired like 3 years later. It was great. Yeah, so like we have plenty to like make fun of back and forth there. Iowa, definitely new ground. Oregon, less so. I know you have your own disdain for Oregon, but like in terms of our own programs, I don't think have we ever played?
We have never played anything. Oregon.
In basketball?
We've never played them in basketball either? Or football.
Yeah, so that like, I mean, aside from the fact that Oregon is like the most, like, they get the most Nike love, and we probably get the least out of every big name Nike school. Like, that's pretty much it. So, Oregon would definitely be like the better game, and they're like just went to a Final Four, and like definitely a better basketball program. Like, not quite a national power, but actually, like, you could have made the argument that when that statement was made, they were like kind of burgeoning on it. Iowa, not, but I kind of want to play Iowa.
Just
for the jokes that like a very few of us will actually appreciate.
Yeah, because like I know somebody like quoted the blog and was like, "Oh, like look at Syracuse, like talk shit about it." I'm like, "Oh God, like let's not like because the worst thing that can happen is like you know humor is so difficult to convey on Twitter as a sarcasm unless you're like an account known for it. We are, but yeah, for some reason not everybody's in on the joke. This is how people get angry online for absolutely no reason. So looking forward to that, Iowa fans.
Yes. And that's how we did a whole first half of a podcast when we came in with like half a topic to talk about.
This is where we thrive, Dan.
It finds a way.
It always finds a way. Before we get to halftime, though, a couple other notes on scheduling. Basketball is facing Eastern Washington and Morehead State. So
various birds,
the same bird, actually.
They're both Eagles, right?
They're both Eagles. This is where I inserted a joke about, orange people and Eagles, and then walked quickly, rapidly away from it, on Monday. So we can walk quickly and rapidly away from it here again, if we so choose.
Yes. All right, now I'm getting freaked out. We talked about Italian food, and now on the site, I'm getting ads for... Oh, that's not Italian food. The first one was.
Yeah.
The Vox Media ad structure is listening to our conversation. It's clear.
All about that deep state?
It's actually for Royal Caribbean, so that's not even accurate. It just happened to be a slide that had Italian food on it.
It's not even close to Italian food.
I slid to the next thing, and then it's like... falafel, and then some people like jumping off the boat.
My current ads on the site are, I got auto glass repair. I've got one of those like ones that looks like spam but isn't.
I have a Marriott Rewards.
I've got lids.
I have Blink. I forget what Blink is. It's a gym. Yeah.
At hotels.com too.
Ooh, BMW. High rent here. This is a great segment.
way to go, guys. Now you're getting... This is how... Oh, and now we got the common AI commercial. I don't know if you listen to Chapo Trap House, but I think it was Matt Chrisman on Chapo was able to like do the entire like common AI Microsoft bit. But then he just started like throwing other nonsense in there. But he like knew the whole thing by heart.
That's great.
Very much. Cool. So now we are indeed at halftime. So Dan, what have you been drinking?
I had a couple things, I think. Let me get Untappd open. You know what? I didn't. I haven't had anything to drink in a while. I like just didn't do anything this weekend. So I had no beers. Not one.
See, I had beers, but I had them from like the same couple breweries, so it's gonna make the comment I usually leave in the post about what we drank slightly barren. What did I have? Oh, so Monkish had this beer, Space Cookie, that is like kind of chocolate chip cookie put into the beer for a double IPA. This time around, they added mango. And it was like pretty sharp and a little weird that there was mango and chocolate chips in a double IPA, but it worked mostly. I had from Monkish their silent language. Wild Ale had Ghetto Style Proverbs, another New England style IPA from them. I was up in Pasadena on Saturday, so I had Poppy Fields Pale Ale from Craftsman. And then I was up at Mount Low Brewing in Arcadia, which I hadn't been to. We were taking my father-in-law out for an early Father's Day gift. So had their Professor's Pale Ale, and then the Hills Have IPA, which is a very good name for a beer. So I commend them for that. But that was really it for me. I was trying to take it easy. My best friend from Syracuse and a roommate of 3 years when we were there is going to be out here this weekend. So there's going to be quite a bit of drinking, so I figured give my liver a rest for a weekend before diving in.
Yeah, I know either this weekend or early next week I'm going to a new craft beer bar that opened up a couple blocks over. They actually got like a write-up in the Undefeated because it's owned by a bunch of like former HBCU students, and it, you know, there aren't that many black-owned craft beer bars like anywhere, and even in Harlem here. And the beer list is like really awesome and has a lot of like stuff that I just does not get around at all from this area. So I'm excited for that. So I will definitely have A, anything, but B, more exciting things to talk about next week.
I'm very glad to hear about that. I'm very glad to hear about the bar and your weekend. I will be at the LA Beer Week kickoff event on Saturday, so I will have a very long list of things. So might as well put 10 minutes on the board for beer next week. I already they released the tap list today, so I've been doing my customary, which is probably maddening to most people, but also not surprising for those who have followed me or the blog for the last 5 years. Where as soon as the tap list for a big beer event is released, I sit there and rank everything, and then map out where they are so that I can optimize my time and make sure that I get all the stuff I really want.
Nice. And so you won't be hearing as much about San Jose State next week, but I think you'll all be okay.
Yeah, you'll probably be fine. Speaking of obscure teams, the MAC. We are discussing the Mid-American Conference. Everyone's favorite, if only because we usually face at least one team from there every year. We used to compete with them for recruits until we didn't. Shout out to Scott Schaefer. And Dan, how do you feel about MACtion? I feel like, and other podcasts have talked about this as well, I feel like the MAC is not as fun as it once was.
Yeah, they've kind of given up the corner of just like crazy shootouts to I think like parts of the Sun Belt and Conference USA have gotten more, which we talked about the last 2 weeks, if you didn't listen to those, have gotten kind of more of that, you know, just big point totals, draw in, you know, fun to bet on, draw in viewers who just want to see like a 45 to 42 point game, where the MAC has kind of come back, not to like, it's not, you know, the mini Big Ten that it probably like espouses, but it just doesn't have that same feel. And this year, I think it's going to be kind of a weird year for the MAC because there are a couple offenses that to put up big numbers, but there aren't like these dynamite, at least on paper, there aren't like these dynamite, like small conference quarterbacks that we're hearing a lot of hype about going into the year, at least compared to previous years. There are definitely some more defensive focused teams like at the top of the preseason ranking. So it's just like a weird year overall for the MAC, I think.
Yeah, I feel like the last couple of years we've seen kind of this transition for the MAC where, like, there are some very good coaches there, but most of the best coaches have already moved on at this point. So
we've touched on it. Like, some of the going, like, the pacing at which guys rise up the rankings from the G5 is moving a lot faster, or at least has in the last couple of years. Now, there was a weird slowdown last year. I don't know if that's going to be, like, a new trend. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but there were a couple of years where the MAC, like, was losing coaches at such a high rate that I don't know that just kind of, like, caused an inevitable slowdown. And now we have, like, a little bit less of a – I mean, we saw it with Babers leaving and obviously Matt Campbell at Iowa State now. And, you know, how many straight, like, ACC hires were from there? Like, every year there would be at least, like, one or two ACC hires and obviously Big Ten, PJ Fleck at Minnesota. So I think there might have been like an inevitable slowdown of, you know, you aren't going to have that much turnover so many years in a row. And it's resulted in like you know, Frank Solich is hanging around the top of the standings every year, and
King of the Hill.
Northern Illinois couldn't possibly keep up the, like, year-over-year pace, and now they're kind of bouncing back, but not well enough where Rod Carey is going to, like, get a ton of huge looks because he, like, kind of looked like he might lose his job there for a bit. So it's definitely, like, come back to the pack in terms of offense and also in terms of, like, the excitement over the Cradle of Coaches.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think Cradle of Coaches still applies, but, like, I'm looking at this league top to bottom, and, like, where in past years, I mean, even last year when, like, Toledo was super good and, like, Western Michigan's been really good, past years where Central Michigan was, even Ohio's best seasons, like, Bowling Green, obviously, when, you know, they had the kind of Clawson to Babers handoff. But, like, this year, it's kind of just Ohio. Like, and even then, like, I don't think you're looking at, you know, the MAC. Like, I don't have Bill C's, like, you know, S&P in front of me, but I would bet that the top MAC team this year is probably the worst it's been in some time, at least according to those ratings. Just because, yeah, you don't have this team that's far and away better than everybody else. You don't have this team that's kind of, you know, competing for, you know, a lot of three-star talent and is maybe flirting with, like, a top 70 to 75 recruiting class. Like, just didn't happen this year. And again, that's how you get, you know, Frank Solich kind of sitting atop the place, kind of, you know, undeterred. Maybe Toledo and Northern Illinois are there, but it is a weird year for the MAC, and I think it could set up, you know, a much, much stronger season next year where you could have, you know, 3 to 6, you know, top 70-ish, maybe 70 to 80-ish teams.
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on, like, if there is an actual shakeup at the top of the league this year. I think we all assume that Toledo will be pretty good, as they always are. We've talked about that. Like, they're, like, weirdly one of the most consistent teams in college football. Northern Illinois seems to have found itself, and they should be pretty good. But, like, does Buffalo make the jump up that they have kind of been tagged as having? Does Western Michigan kind of return to, obviously, I don't think they're going to go, you know, 13-0, but do they take a step forward under Tim Lester?
Recruiting says maybe.
Also, like, at the top, like, I think Ohio is pretty consistent. But it feels like, you know, your Ohio team for most years, except for there's maybe a little more of a higher ceiling at quarterback. But it seems like it's the rest of the league that's taken more of a step backwards that's kind of opened the door for Ohio to maybe finally break through and win the league versus, like, Ohio taking a big step forward. I think Frank Solich just kind of has his team where it is every year now. And this could have been, like, a 2016 Ohio team in terms of quality. But the you know, there isn't that dynamite Toledo or that dynamite Western Michigan team out there to kind of keep them in the second tier here.
Right. And, yeah, like, I mean, you know, the East has always been, I think, a little bit behind just because, like, Akron and Buffalo and Kent State have lagged for so long, and, like, Miami of Ohio's only recently gotten consistent again. Bowling Green obviously dropped off, and that's how you get, like you just mentioned, like, that's how you get Ohio kind of lording over everyone. That's not to take away from, like, the team is pretty good. You know, Nathan Rourke is arguably the best quarterback in the league. They do have some really great offensive linemen. They have some great guys in the secondary as well that are, you know, all conference types. But still, like, Ohio playing at their best is still only maybe, like, a top 45 to 55 team in the country. And, you know, that's not terrible, but it does get a little bit more concerning for your conference when the next best team is, like, either NIU or Toledo, who's maybe, like, in the 65 to 70 range.
Yeah, Ohio is interesting. They actually, like, personnel-wise on offense, they actually kind of remind me of what Syracuse has going on this year. Roark obviously isn't as experienced as Dungy and obviously not as good, but he does give them a potential high ceiling. He's kind of like a boomer bust as a passer. He throws a lot of interceptions, but also scores and has a pretty high yard. I mean, pretty explosive overall.
Gunslinger style. Have,
yeah. But he also has this, like, really, he's going to have a really nice complement of offensive linemen, which you mentioned. I think they're returning a lot of starts in between them, if not, like, a whole starting unit, kind of like what Syracuse has going on. And they have a solid running back coming back. So it's a pretty good recipe for probably taking a step forward from what they were last year. And in this league, that might be enough definitely to challenge for the division, if not, you know, finally go through and win it. Now, I think there are a couple of schools lingering below that could challenge them, but they're definitely going to be the odds-on favorites.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm looking at this line right now. Like, this line is, like, bigger than Syracuse's. Like, and that's not to disparage Syracuse. It's just to say, like, you know, they've got Joe Lowry's 305, Joe Anderson's 340 at left guard. They do replace the center and the right guard, but even those guys, you know, 287, 294 for Brett Cottrell and Darrell Wood. Austin Pleasance is 328. Like, this is a big line. I mean, and you know, this isn't – this is just kind of what happens when you have a lot of state schools in the Midwest. But, like, again, a lot of these guys are good. Some of them might have some NFL aspirations. Down the line, this is really kind of – especially among the top teams in the MAC, a lot of big linemen. But I think Ohio just kind of stands above a little bit, and it helps too when you've got an experienced, you know, scrambler like Nathan Rourke, who can kind of make some things happen with his legs. So I do really like what Ohio has, and I think, again, in part, it's because Ohio's been able to really be consistent under Solich, and the other part of that is obviously because, you know, everybody in the East is taking kind of a step back. Like, I think, you know, Buffalo is barely going to be a top 100 team. And they're the odds-on favorite, along with maybe Miami, Ohio, to finish second in the East.
Yeah. Looking at Buffalo, like, is Lance Leopold, like, the most interesting coach in this conference? Like, in terms of, like, who might take the next step? Aside from Jason Candle, it's probably the obvious one.
He's the most alliterative.
Definitely the most alliterative. Well, Chris Creighton has something to say about
that. That's true. Creighton's another guy who, like, if Creighton, I really like Eastern Michigan. I think Creighton can potentially push them forward. I think Bill C's a little bit higher on them than some other preview publications. I could see, the problem is just the division EMUs. And if EMU is in the East, EMU would probably contend with Ohio at the top. But, you know, I think Leopold is an interesting one if he can get Buffalo to be something. But he's also a guy who, you know, can stick around a while. Candle, I think this year is going to prove a lot for him because it's going to, you know, ask, okay, like, you know, you did plenty with Campbell's guys. Can you, now that the team is a little bit more, you know, Candle's, I mean, obviously Candle was too, like, an internal promotion, but seeing Candle be able to, you know, maybe if they can win the West again this year with a team that's predominantly his guys, you know, suddenly, yeah, maybe he gets some looks if the American Athletic Conference, which does have you know, significantly more money available to them than the MAC, maybe they give him a look. Maybe, you know, if a random Big Ten job becomes open, and honestly, I don't see it, but if, I mean, high Michigan State, if something like that happened, like, maybe Candle gets a look. But I think a lot of the MAC guys, like we talked about, you know, for some of the other leagues, could end up staying put for another year or two until, you know, the recent kind of carousel turns over. Because I think a lot of big jobs have really rotated in recent years. And the only way you see a shakeup is if, like, you know, somehow, like, you know, Saban surprisingly retires or goes to the NFL again. USC turns over. Texas turns over surprisingly again. Oklahoma turns over maybe and doesn't, you know, bring somebody up from internal. Like, it would take a lot of things to happen all at once for the type of, like, large scale changes at the Power Five level that, you know, we just kind of got done with over these past couple seasons.
Yeah, looking like, Candle's definitely the only guy who I could even see, unless, you know, someone breaks through and has, like, a crazy season that we don't see. Like, if Tim Lester brings Western Michigan back to the Sugar Bowl or whatever, which would be, you know, we'd have way more to say about that. But looking at Candle's profile, like, Toledo is his only FBS stop. He is a Mount Union grad. He coached wide receiver and offensive coordinator at Mount Union from 2003 to 2008.
Jim, very good program for those who aren't aware.
Yes. At the, they're D3, right? They're like a D3, like, yes. Title contender all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, and then he went to Toledo in 2009, and he was at Toledo the entire time up until he was promoted to head coach. He's from Ohio, so I think the best thing he has going for him, aside from the fact that he's, you know, 21-7 as a head coach to start, he's recruiting like crazy for a MAC team. It's way too early to like take like national rankings into account really for the 2019 season because it's so much about numbers, but. Like, right now, he has the 43rd ranked class because he has 9 guys in, and I think they're all but 1 or 3 stars. Last year, he signed, like, a top 70 class. The year before, he had the number 1 class in the MAC. He's recruiting, like, at a close to a different level from the rest of the conference. And also, the fact that he is, you know, coming in after Matt Campbell, if someone wants to try to catch lightning in a bottle like Iowa State did, they can point to Candle as, you know, a guy from his tree who can hopefully have the same kind of like jump start that Campbell did. Now, you know, you could also then just point to Tim Beckman and say it doesn't always work, and we've talked about how quickly Toledo has how effortlessly Toledo seems to make coaches work, and some of them turn into Nick Saban and Gary Pinkel, and others turn into Tim Beckman. But like you said, I think there's enough questions where he might not even get a job after this year just because this conference overall has like a weird mix of like older coaches and unproven guys and guys who just aren't there yet. And then it really going to depend on how many openings there are to see if Candle will get a look, because he is just kind of plugged into Toledo and there isn't much else there in terms of like who he's been exposed to.
Right. No, I think that's completely dead on. Like, there's... Again, it's not to disparage everybody at the MAC level right now. It's just to point out, like, okay, it's kind of weird. Like, you have a lot of turnover all at once, and then you have a lot of just, like, question marks about what happens going forward. As we see in, you know, like, the current ACC, the Pac-12 of late, and that's how you got this offseason's turnover and potentially next offseason's turnover, where if everyone's getting better all at once, does kind of say, well, somebody has to move up here. But looking around the MAC, I think we've established that Ohio is probably the best team, that it's just dependent on whether or not they can actually win the league. Dan, who do you think is the worst team in this conference?
It's probably our good friend Sean Lewis's Kent State Golden Flashes, right?
Probably.
There's a reason why they couldn't hire anyone, and no offense to Sean Lewis, but he definitely skipped the line, like, in terms of getting a head coaching job. Like, Kent State had one of the more bizarre coaching searches that you'll find. I think they went through, like, over a dozen names before they got Sean Lewis to go there. And hopefully it works out, because I think we all like Sean Lewis. But, yeah, that's, for whatever reason, just has turned into a really challenging job.
He might, he might have quite a few sad Drake gifts to... to share this offseason.
I mean, he might be tracking with Drake in terms of like real life as well.
Hopefully not, since I feel like a lot of terrible things have been revealed.
But yeah, I'm hoping not literally for him personally. I also hope his football program doesn't have like a secret child. That'd be weird. I don't know how that would even work. They have like a small like D3 school that they don't want to tell anyone about. Like, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, they're going to be in full rebuild, and the best thing you can say is, like, unlike Tim Lester, who took over a team that was thriving when he got there because of the 13-0 season, he's going to have a lot of rope, which is nice.
Oh yeah, he's going to have a good 4 or 5 seasons, hopefully, to fix this. And I think you kind of understand that when you're looking at the full teardown action. And he's going to try to mimic, you know, what Babers has done with the spread, and I really hope he does, just because, you know, I don't have anything against Kent State. They're fun. I don't want to schedule them, and I think Dino is smart enough not to, just because I don't want to – I mean, I'd schedule them, like, now, like, in the next 2 years, fine. But, like, again, like, Lewis also knows those guys. Like, Kaufman, who's the defensive coordinator, also knows those guys. Like, you know, there's a lot of reasons why you don't want to, you know, face a known entity necessarily. Unless you're Nick Saban. In that case, you definitely do. Just because Nick Saban has this weird ability to kind of get past that, you know, known quantity type thing. I think also, like, at that level, it's a little bit different versus, like, what Syracuse has suffered from in recent years is just when you're building things still and there's not that much difference between the guy who left and the guy who's still there in terms of talent level, or in the case of what happened at Middle Tennessee last year, I think, you know, Schaefer just knows how to play mind games a little bit, and I don't necessarily know if, and this isn't Dino's fault, I don't necessarily know if Dino was ready or understanding of just how many mind games were hanging out there, and unfortunately came back to bite us. So I don't think that would happen if we faced Kent State, especially because of the talent disparity, but yeah, maybe Kent State's good someday. I do actually think, to be honest, like, that it's not as clear-cut about at the bottom. Like, you could see Ball State take that mantle. I actually think CMU could contend for it. That's not to say that, like, you know, Bonamigo's terrible, but they, in the last couple seasons, CMU's really turned over most of their NFL caliber talent. And I think this year's going to be a hard reset when now you really are, like, at rock bottom with quarterback. You're replacing most of the defense. There's a lot of question to the Chippewas, too.
And Bowling Green's been pretty terrible since Baber left, and they are now, like, they have fewer and fewer of his players. Mike Jinks is 6-18 there through 3 years.
Also a terrible hire.
Yeah, fun fact, and I want to know if you know this. I just discovered this 2 minutes ago. Do you know who the Bowling Green defensive coordinator is?
I feel like I remarked about this, like, to myself recently. I'm not looking it up, I swear.
He just got hired this year. He was not in the FBS level last year, but he is a former FBS head coach. And I'd venture to say a big name for reasons that you don't want to be a big name.
It's not Bill Callahan.
No, that'd be fun. You're on the right path. There are connections to Bill Callahan.
This is Bo Pelini.
Very close connections to Bo Pelini.
This is Carl Pelini.
Yes.
6 degrees of Bo Pelini here.
That was impressive. Literally almost nailed it on desk two. Just missed, like, the year he was born.
Yeah,
Carl Pelini, who was technically last seen coaching under his brother at Youngstown State, but before that was the 5-15 head coach of FAU, who was fired in disgrace after being caught doing cocaine, I think.
Just like 22% of men's lacrosse players last year.
Yes, allegedly. Allegedly on Carl Pelini. That was a poll for men's lacrosse. do better, sport.
Christ. All right, before we wrap up here, because this thing could go on quite some time, and I see us teetering towards it.
We started talking about Carl Pelini, so yes.
Yes, we were getting there. Okay, Dan, A, who do you see winning each division? And B, who do you see representing this league in the, I don't know, I guess they're the Dollar General Bowls, like the best one somehow for them?
Oh, that's so terrible. And it's only going to get worse.
Like, Mountain West, too, they're about to enter that realm of Arizona Bowl being your best bowl.
Yeah, because they're getting bumped from Vegas.
Yep.
Yeah, they just talked about this on PAPN, like, not semi-recently, I think. Like, they need to figure out, like, a better structure for making the bowls where you can have more intriguing matchups that aren't just, like, G5, G5, because, you know, they're just, right now, like, the bowl matchups are really, really segregated, which isn't great. I think, by default, in the West, I'm going to go with Toledo. I'm concerned about the quarterback post Logan Woodside. I think there's a fair chance that, you know, they have no one with any real experience there. So, but I trust Handel. I think overall their talent's the best in the conference. I'm going to go with Ohio in the East. And I'm going to lean Ohio for the championship, but I think it's pretty up in the air.
Yeah, I got to agree with you there. I think Toledo still wins the conference. Not the conference, the division in the West. But I think Ohio takes this. I think just by way of, you know, them standing pat and everybody else taking like a half step back. Ohio was a contender last year. They have been most seasons of late, especially, actually, even when Bowling Green was kind of firing on all cylinders, Ohio was just kind of like sitting around the second place, third place area. So yeah, I see Ohio taking this. I think they're the class of the league just by way of default. And I think that changes next year when I don't think they take a step back, but I think everybody else takes that, aforementioned step forward again.
Yeah, I think that's legit. I think NIU could rise up, but I'm just not sold on them as a program right now. I think they're definitely, I think Rod Terry's probably out of the woods in terms of like in real threat to get fired soon, but like they were there for a bit after really falling from the highs they had in the early 2010s. So it wouldn't be a shocker if they ended up winning the West, but I'm just like, haven't been super impressed by them. Even last year when they bounced back to 8-5, I just don't think they're the same program they were.
No, and I mean, last year, to be honest, a lot of it was based on that defense. Like, the defense only let up about 22 points per game, which is pretty nice. But they lose a hell of a lot of those guys, including, like, most of the back seven. Like, there's just a... It's like I said, I think everybody took, like, a half step back. I still don't really believe in Carey, but I think he can do enough to stick around this year. And then next year, I think he might be able to take that step forward again. He's one of these guys like a lot of these coaches, unfortunately. Like you're either somebody trending up and out, or you're somebody kind of hanging around. And I think the Mac right now might have a few too many guys just quote unquote hanging around.
Yeah, I mean him. I mean Terry Bowden is who he is. He's done a nice job, all things considered. There, Mike New, like he could be on the way out soon. Bonamago, I think they're going to give him a decent amount of time because he's an alum. We got him out of a rough spot. Chuck Martin is like, eh.
But like Lester too, like another guy who's like, he's not going anywhere. He's an alum. Like there are too many guys in this conference right now that like could just like, you know, 5-7 their way to like a 6-year stay.
Yeah, like Solich. I mean, how many years Solich is going to be there until he wants to retire? And I don't think he's going to do poorly. Obviously, we pick them to win the conference, but like there just aren't. There aren't that many guys who are a real threat to leave, and there aren't that many guys who are really a real threat to be fired. And it makes for what could be a pretty stagnant conference overall, which isn't the best thing if you're the Mac. You want to be more exciting and more you want to have more intrigue than what I think we expect out of this league this year compared to like, you know, a couple of years ago when there were definitely more interesting names and hot coaches and people you want to see, especially if you're like a Syracuse couple years ago, you were watching Bowling Green on a stretch because you knew Bambers to be the guy. There isn't that intrigue right now with this league, at least as of now. Now, like if a Lester or, a Leipold or a Creighton even was really to rise up and you know, go on a crazy run, or Candle, obviously, if he was going to like run the table, then that changes. But projecting right now, it's just not what you often see from the Mac.
I concur. I think that's a good place to end us.
Yeah, sounds good. Next week we're at the Mountain West, which is definitely we get the big bump into the sub Power Five pair of leagues.
Yeah, and although Mountain West on some also weird footing, we'll talk about that next week. Teaser.
Sounds good. Teaser for the league that you probably knew we were going to talk about if you follow this at all.
The truth. All right. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes or on Blog Talk or any other service that you listen to podcasts on. And go Orange.
Go Orange.
With 25% off all new and up to 70% off previously leased furnishings, do you really need a better reason to party? We don't think so. Come visit our new Court Furniture Clearance Center with more than 9,000 square feet of new and previously leased furniture and decor for your home and office. Sofas from $199.99, bedroom sets from $399.99, dining sets from $299.99, and more. Free food, prizes, and fun all weekend long at our Chandelier Court Furniture Clearance Center at 13946 Lee Jackson Memorial Highway, or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com. Huge savings on new and previously leased furnishings. That's right, huge savings. At Court Furniture Clearance Center, choose from our wide variety of new and previously leased furniture and decor for your home or office. You'll find sofas from $199.99 and more. Everything in our 9,000 square foot showroom is Court certified, guaranteed, and in stock, ready for delivery or to take home today. Visit our Chantilly Court Furniture Clearance Center at 13946 Lee Jackson Memorial Highway or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com. Mention Radio 20 and get 20% off.